This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris, let's get into some news stuff. Before we do that, though, I wanted to mention that Ryan Scott did a really, really big interview with director Scott Derrickson, the guy behind Doctor Strange and The Black Phone. And this interview spanned Derrickson's entire career. He got his start directing features with one of the, I think, direct-to-video Hellraiser movies. And then the interview actually spans his plans to make The Black Phone 2. So I just wanted to highlight this because it's a really, really good interview. It has a bunch of interesting stuff. There's a story in there about how Guillermo del Toro helped save Derrickson's career. So if you like movies, even if you're not like a huge fan of any of Derrickson's particular projects, I think this is like an instructive, interesting interview to check out. So I just wanted to highlight that at the top of the show. Let's talk about a trailer that dropped yesterday for Mufasa the Lion King. This is Barry Jenkins' new movie, Chris. What do you make of this?
Oh, man. You know, I'm of two minds of it. The previous quote unquote live action Lion King movie is just hideous. It has no reason to exist, but it also made a bajillion dollars. So what do I know? And this looks like more of the same. It looks like digital slop, but I love Barry Jenkins. I want Barry Jenkins to get paid because I want him to keep making movies. So, you know, I don't think I have any interest in ever seeing this, but if it helps Barry Jenkins get a more personal movie off the ground, then I can't fault it too much. I hope he got a big paycheck. I hope he uses that paycheck to make something really good again. You know, and yeah. Who knows? Maybe this will be good. Who knows? You know, maybe he'll pull it off. He's such a good filmmaker. Maybe he'll surprise us all. Who knows?
Yeah, he's been talking a lot on social media and I think maybe even in like some of the Disney press releases and stuff about like how the original animated Lion King movie sort of helped introduce a young generation to Shakespeare, you know, because it's an adaptation of a Shakespeare play. And then also like helped people grapple with the idea of grief, because obviously the death of Mufasa in the original movie is like a really big moment for a lot of folks. So he seems to be trying to like latch on to whatever he can to help, almost justify his interest in this project in a way. When I watched this trailer, I noticed Timon and Pumbaa, the little, you know, funny side characters in there. And I was like, wait a second, what the hell is going on here? If these characters interact with Mufasa when Mufasa was a kid or something, I'm going to be pretty upset. Is also, too like, strong of a word.
How old are those characters? Are they like immortal? Like, I don't understand like how.
Yeah. So I saw that, but then I saw in the same, I guess, press release, they said, and I think the names show up at the end of the trailer, that Donald Glover and Beyonce are coming back. So maybe it's going to be one of those things where there are like future moments on the timeline spliced in. So that would make much more sense. But
it'll probably be like The Hobbit, where The Hobbit has that intro where it's like the old Frodo is hanging out and or the old Bilbo is hanging out and Frodo is there. And they're like, let's talk about your old adventures. It's probably going to be something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to 28 Years Later. This new movie from Danny Boyle is written by Alex Garland. We talked a little bit about this on the show when this project was announced, I think. And now a cast has been formulated here, and we have Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Ralph Fiennes, and Jodie Comer, I guess, set to appear in this movie. So, Chris, I've like completely missed the entire 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later, like this whole thing just completely passed me by, partially because 28 Days Later, I don't think has ever been on streaming, or not in years and years. I think there might be some sort of streaming rights issues or something with it there. But I missed all this, but I know you're a big horror guy. So what do you make of the reunion of these guys for this project, and then also the new cast that they've lined up here?
I'm pretty excited. The 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later are both pretty good movies. This cast is really struts a really good cast. Like, it's a good lineup of people. So I'm kind of excited about this. I'm excited that Danny Boyle is coming back to do it, because he actually didn't do 28 Weeks Later. He only did the first one, but I kind of like that he's coming back, and Alex Garland is coming back, and I am curious to see like what's this world going to look like 28 years later. And it also, I just makes me feel very old that 28 years have passed.
Yeah. I like, what do you think about Danny Boyle as a director? I know this is like a broader topic than what we normally get into here. But what do you make of him? Are you like, when you see his name on something, are you excited?
He's kind of like hit or miss for me. Like, some of his movies I think are pretty strong. Some of them I'm just like, eh, I don't really care. He's not like as distinct as he could be in my mind. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't have like an idea in my head of like what a Danny Boyle movie looks like, because you have like Trainspotting, and then you have like Steve Jobs. Those movies are like completely polar opposites, yet he directed both of them. And so it's kind of a weird little career he has.
Yeah, he occupies this bizarre space in my head of like a journeyman director who also has some style and like a little bit of a distinct kind of thing. I mean, I guess you're right. Like, I don't know if I could necessarily pinpoint exactly what it is that makes a Danny Boyle film a Danny Boyle film, except for, you know, a certain sense of energy that he often brings to his stories. But like, it's kind of hard to put your finger on what exactly that is. But yeah, the reason I like him is because he has bounced around in so many different genres and done so many different types of things. So it is interesting that he's going back to not only a genre that he's gone to before, but like literally the same world that he, you know, once helped launch. So I'll be interested to see how that pans out. Hopefully I'll be able to catch up with the other two movies before this one actually comes out. Chris, you know what I'm guessing you've been missing a lot in your life? Marvel movies.
Yes.
So where are you at on Deadpool and Wolverine these days?
Oh, man. I'm going to see it. I feel like it's one of those movies, like, you're going to have to see it. Like, it's going to be an event. And I'm sort of like Deadpool neutral. I did not like the first Deadpool movie. I thought the sequel was surprisingly good. So maybe this third one will be good. You know, maybe, you know, the idea that Hugh Jackman is coming back is both interesting and also kind of weird, because he had such a good send off with Logan. And I know they're doing the whole thing where this is like a variant. This isn't the same Wolverine, but it's like, man, can't we just let things end sometimes? And I'm also like not the biggest like Sean Levy fan. Like, yeah, I don't like, is anyone a Sean Levy fan? I refuse to believe there's someone out there who's like, yeah, a Sean Levy movie, I gotta see that. Like, he's just like a guy who makes I guess there are people who like, what is that? That robot, Real Steel. People like that. And people loved Free Guy. I did not, but people sure love that movie. So I don't know. Maybe people do like his work. I don't know.
Yeah, he did the Night at the Museum movies, which I guess have their fans for people.
I mean, his movies make money, so they clearly appeal to somebody. I don't know who.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
me.
And he directed some Stranger Things episodes, which I know people enjoyed.
Right,
I've like probably enjoyed those too. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, he mentioned in this interview that he did recently, he was talking about Deadpool and Wolverine, and he said something that I think you actually would appreciate, where he was talking about, like, his quote is, "I'm definitely not looking to do homework when I go to the movies." More broadly speaking, he's just talking about, like, you don't have to see a ton of stuff to like understand what's going on in Deadpool and Wolverine. He said, I very much made this film with certainly a healthy respect and gratitude towards the rabid fan base that has peak fluency in the mythology and lore of these characters in this world. But I didn't want to presume that this movie is built for entertainment with no obligation to come prepared with prior research. So, you know, whether this is actually true, I kind of have some have some doubts. I mean, I don't want to like just sit here and call the man a liar. It just seems like a thing that that people would want to hear. But watching the trailer, it's like Matthew McFadyen. I think that's right. The guy from Succession, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
His character is playing a member of the Time Variance Authority from Loki. So like,
yeah,
I guess you can technically get that, like, oh, this is an organization that deals with time and multiverses or something just by watching this movie. I guess that's probably what he's talking about, but it probably would be some sort of, you know, beneficial to like have some familiarity with Hugh Jackman's work as Wolverine, for example.
I mean, when that new trailer dropped, there were articles, including articles on slashfilm.com, where we were like, look who's in this trailer. It's whatever, beep bop blibble blopple from whatever. You know, it's like, I don't characters from friggin' the awful first Wolverine movie. What is that called? X-Men Origins or whatever. Like,
yes,
they're coming back for this movie. So it's like, you clearly have to have some. You know, whatever Sean Levy is saying there, you know, I would like it to be true, but you clearly have to have some sort of knowledge beforehand. Like, maybe they'll do a good job explaining it. Maybe they'll show up and be like, remember me? I'm Fizzle Bottle Fizzle Man. I don't know their names.
Yeah. You know? Excellent. Okay. I love it. I'll choose to try to take Sean Levy at his word here and believe that I don't need to like revisit all of this stuff in order to watch Deadpool and Wolverine, because frankly, I wouldn't have done that anyway. So, we'll see how that goes. This movie is certainly going to be like one of the biggest movies of the summer, as Ryan and I talked about on the podcast yesterday. Let's take a break and then we'll get back into some more news right after this. All right, so I'm curious what you think about this, Chris. So there's a story that came out, I think this was yesterday, that end of last week, yet another Evil Dead movie is in the works here. So I think we had talked not too long ago about how a director named Sebastian Vanacek was revealed recently to be working on an Evil Dead spinoff film that was in February of this year. And then, yeah, late last week, Francis Galuppi, I think is, or maybe Galuppi, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. I guess he pitched a story to Sam Raimi and his team. He developed an idea for an Evil Dead movie set in that same universe, and they're going ahead with it. So we don't know any details about what this is actually going to be. It's tough to kind of judge what this could even feel like, because I'm not familiar with this director's work. He has a movie called The Last Stop in Yuma County that I think is coming out later this year. So I've not seen the one and only feature directorial credit he has. I don't know. Have you like seen that movie at a festival or anything, Chris? Do you know anything about that? Okay.
I've seen like advertisements for it on twitter.com, but I have not, or X as the cool kids call it now, but I haven't seen the movie. No.
Okay, so there are currently, I think, 5 movies in the Evil Dead franchise, and then a TV show that aired for a few seasons, 2 or 3 seasons. So what do you think about whether or not like the Evil Dead is equipped to be the load-bearing franchise that it seems to be here? Like the expansion in the past few years of a franchise that, well, let's go back to 2013. You know, before 2013, it kind of seemed like Evil Dead was just dead, basically, like was not really a franchise that was going to be like an ongoing concern. But in the past, you know, 15 years, let's call it, it seems like there's really been a sort of resurrection of this. So what do you think about the Evil Dead as like a foundational piece of the horror canon that is able to withstand all of these spinoffs and different projects set in this universe?
I like this idea. I you know, the more Evil Dead movies, the better. Like, they don't have to be connected. They just have to be set in that. Because the Evil Dead setup is basically very simple. It's, you know, there's a cursed book. You read from the book. It unleashes these demonic forces. That's really all you need. And from that, you can go crazy. Like, yeah, it was fun to have the movies connected with, you know, Bruce Campbell's character. But you don't really need that. And I think it's been established at this point you don't really need that. You can keep going. you can just go nuts. You can go crazy with the, you can take that setup and go crazy with it. And I kind of like the idea that they're trying different things. Cause why not? You know, why build a little universe, go nuts with it.
Do you think that they should continue to play with the setting? Like Evil Dead Rise was in an apartment building. That was like, the famous thing about that was like, it went out of the sort of cabin in the woods kind of thing. And I know that Army of Darkness was obviously like a whole medieval thing that had a different aesthetic and vibe and everything. But like typically these movies are known as like cabin in the woods type of things. But do you think the Evil Dead Rise template showed that the Evil Dead concept can and should expand beyond sort of what we're familiar with?
Yeah, they should take it, you know, I don't want to say go to space because like the last resort, but go to like, you know, Evil Dead on a ship or something like, you know, you can have fun with it. You can go, I do think, you know, the Cabin in the Woods setting is great, but it's also been done to death. I mean, we have a movie literally called Cabin in the Woods, which kind of like took the wind out of the sails of any future Cabin in the Woods movie. Like, why not, you know, it should be like a secluded location. Like that helps the story out because, like, you know, even though it's an apartment building, it's a secluded apartment building. And so it does help to have it be like cut off from someplace else. But I do think you can go anywhere with it, really. You just need someone to find the book in wherever they find it. And then you can, I kind of want to see like different eras. Like, it'd be cool to have like an Evil Dead movie set in the past. Like, I mean, we have that technically already with Army of Darkness, but like different era, like, you know, the 1930s or something, like, you know, you could do really anything with it. You know, the sky's the limit. So why not have fun with the premise?
Yeah, it's an ancient book that makes sense to just like pick up along the way, you know, at various points in its throughout its existence. So that would be really cool. I'd love to see that.
Especially like the pilgrims, they find the book and it's Thanksgiving for everybody.
Yeah, I love the idea of like a Humphrey Bogart figure finding it. That's just a really cool
like
visual.
Evil Dead noir would be very cool. Someone make that happen.
All right, maybe we shouldn't talk we should save our pitches.
If someone makes Evil Dead noir, I better get a paycheck. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so I wanted to talk to you too about the new Rosemary's Baby prequel. It's called Apartment 7A. And we've known about this for a couple years now. For some reason, I thought that there were rumors that this might be getting a theatrical release. That's evidently not true. I was trying to go back and find, I have no idea why I thought that. I think I was just straight up wrong on that one. But we know now that this movie is actually going to be coming to Paramount Plus later on this year. And as I mentioned, it's a Rosemary's Baby prequel. The official synopsis has been revealed. I'm going to read that real quick. It's one line. When a struggling young dancer suffers a devastating injury, she finds herself drawn in by dark forces when a peculiar, well-connected older couple promises her a shot at fame. And that, you know, I just watched Rosemary's Baby for the first time. I think it was last year or maybe the year before. And this description of this prequel sounds like shockingly different to me. So what do you make of this? Just like this description, and Julie Garner, by the way, from Ozark is going to be starring in this. So what do you think about this movie right now?
You know, there were like a few weeks ago or a few months ago, there was a part of me would be like instantly writing this off. Like, this is a dumb idea. Let's not do it. But then the first Omen just came out, and that was a horror prequel that seemed unnecessary. And it was so surprisingly good. I don't know if you saw that. Did you see that, Ben?
Did, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, like, it was shockingly good. So now I'm sort of like, it's like flipped my world upside down, where I'm like, maybe this will be good too. Who knows? Like, I mean, there's a strong chance it will not be good. It will probably suck. But the first Omen has broadened my horizons, and so now I'm sort of willing to give this a shot. And Julia Garner is a really good performer, so she could potentially do something good here. I you know, at the same time, I'm kind of like, well, we know how this ends. She, you know, spoiler alert, she gets pushed out a window and dies. So it's like, I don't really know like what else you can do with that other than make a really bleak, unpleasant movie, but I'm willing to give it a shot at this point.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, you could argue that like the first Omen has like a bleak and unpleasant ending, but yeah, also gave you a little bit of that sort of like fist pumping, like, hell yeah, I love the movies kind of feeling. So like in a perfect world, maybe that would give us something similar. Natalie Erica James is the director of this movie. She directed 2020's Relic previously. Did you see that movie?
I did not see that.
I heard good things about it. I did not see it either. So yeah, maybe some, I mean, we're just,
oh wait, no, I did see that. I'm sorry. I forgot about it, but I did see it. It was pretty good.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Excellent. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this is like. And yeah, I'm sort of, yeah, fingers crossed that this is like a First Omen type of situation instead of, I don't know, name 10 forgettable, you know, direct to video kind of prequel things attached. Yeah. So, I am kind of like encouraged by how different it sounds though. A lot of times it seems like, you know, I'm not nearly as enmeshed in the horror community as you are, Chris, but it seems like to me a lot of times when they'll announce, you know, a prequel or, you know, some sort of loosely connected story in the same universe, it kind of feels like an excuse almost to like essentially remake the same story that everybody is familiar with. Like I'm thinking of like The Thing from 2011, which was like basically almost a beat for beat remake, even though it was kind of different. Yeah. And this sounds different enough from like the actual story of Rosemary's Baby to me that like maybe it won't fall into the same traps that a lot of these horror films fall into, where it's just like repeating the same basic template, but with like different jump scares or something like that. So like the difference in the story is what's giving me the most hope here, I think. So a couple other stories that I wanted to mention. A live action Scooby-Doo drama series is coming to Netflix. Any takes on this, Chris?
Thank God. I'm just so glad this is happening. No, I have no take on this other than, okay, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Greg Berlanti's company is the one behind it, and I think he was one of the people responsible for like Riverdale and Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. So it's probably going to be in that vein. Valerie Ettenhofer, who wrote this story for us at Slash Film, is a big Scooby-Doo fan. She did a great oral history of Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island recently. If anybody is a fan of that film and didn't know about that oral history, I would recommend checking that out. But she pointed out in her write-up that this show marks an abrupt change in priorities for Warner Brothers Discovery, the I guess parent company that owns the Scooby-Doo licensing or whatever, because previously they canceled the animated feature Scoob Holiday Haunt, and they also permanently shelved Coyote versus Acme, which is like a Saturday morning cartoon type of vibe kind of thing. So it seems clear that they're like definitely looking to cash in on this whole Riverdale phenomenon, and Netflix, which was licensing that show from I think Warner Brothers or maybe the CW or something like that, is like, all right, just give us, you know, our own version of that we can own ourselves. So I don't know. I haven't really watched. I've dipped into those shows occasionally just to like see a little bit of what's going on, but I can't say that I've ever actually watched a full episode of any of them. So if we have any fans of those shows out here, you know, in our listenership, and you're interested in this Scooby-Doo thing, like write in and let us know, because I would love to know what you think a Scooby-Doo show in that vein might actually look like. All right, last story, Chris. We simply must talk about the Russo brothers, two of your favorite people in all of Hollywood.
Yes. God, I love them.
their latest story here, basically one of them, Joe Russo, was reflecting on the idea of basically like why Marvel has sort of taken a plunge in recent years in terms of quality, in terms of cultural relevance. And I'm going to read some of his quote. There's a big generational divide about how you consume media. There's a generation that's used to appointment viewing and going to a theater on a certain date to see something, but it's aging out. Meanwhile, the new generation are, I want it now, I want to process it now, and then moving on to the next thing, which they process whilst doing two other things at the same time. It's a very different moment in time than it's ever been. So I think everyone, including Marvel, is experiencing the same thing, this transition. And I think that is really probably what's at play more than anything else. So, I don't know. Chris, what do you make of these comments?
Man, it's just, these guys are such hacks. I'm sorry. And like they're rich and they're famous and they can do whatever they want, and they'll continue to do what they want. But it seems like that Simpsons quote where it's like, am I so out of touch? No, it's the children who were to blame. And like, that's literally what this sounds like. And it's just, no.
I mean, I've seen some of the response to this, and I agree, you know, which largely echoes your sentiments. And I agree that like, you know, to say that that's what's at play more than anything else just kind of seems silly. You know, he does like some of the things he's talking about are factual. Like, you know, we are in this sort of transition period. The generation below us, or multiple generations now below us, definitely consume media differently. But like, I just don't know if that, it sounds like he's making excuses for Marvel basically. And like, yeah. That's just not, it's not the way to do that. He doesn't even work for Marvel anymore. Like, you don't have to do that. Like, I could understand if you're still, you know, if you're lined up to make Avengers 16 or whatever, and you're sort of still in the Marvel roster, and like you're going out and doing all these interviews and stuff, and you want to kind of like toe the line for the company that you're working for. Like, I get that on some level. But yeah, this just kind of like, feels like silly.
Yeah, like it's not wrong that there is a divide in how people consume media. Like, I'm not even saying like that's wrong, but it's like, you have to admit that the last few Marvel movies have not been, they've definitely lost their spark. And I don't think it's because people watch things differently. I think it's just because you can only hold people's attention with something for so long. And
yeah,
we've had this going on for 25 years or something like that? Some insane number.
2008, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so sooner or later, people aren't going to want the same thing over and over again. And the movies have gotten lazier and less enjoyable. Like, they're less novel. I think the novelty has really worn off. I don't think it's really about how you consume the movies. I think it's more about the fresh coat of paint has faded.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's something that isn't really brought up a lot in these conversations. It's like, you know, for years and years, it kind of seemed like, oh my God, now we get the opportunity to see this great actor do, you know, step over into this world. And like, there's only so many times that you can do that before the luster kind of wears off a little bit. And I feel like people don't really incorporate that into their analyses of why, you know, Marvel has taken a dip in recent years. But like, our article goes over several reasons that, you know, we've talked about on this podcast and stuff, like Disney oversaturating the market with, you know, because of the Disney Plus thing, and then the impact of the pandemic, and then like superhero movies, yeah, experiencing sort of like a natural decline, or like movies themselves not necessarily holding the dominant place in culture as they once were, or like theater presentation not being up to snuff, you know, all the stuff that we've been talking about for years, ever since we started doing the show. I think all of that stuff is combining to be the real answer of like why the stuff has experienced a little bit of a drop off. So for them, for Anthony and Joe Russo to basically just be like, it's the kids, it's just like I understand why it's like a simplified kind of silly thing. So
yeah,
anyway, just wanted to bring that up. You know, never miss an opportunity to talk about the Russos here on the show. So
at the same time, I want to make it clear that I'm not defending kids at all. I don't like kids. They can go to hell.
Okay, well, I'm glad that's actually a perfect note to end on, Chris, and I'm glad that you made that very, very clear. Just, you know, screw kids, colon Chris Evangelista. That's
hell with those kids. Yeah.
All right, well, you can find much more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Please leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.